Every month, we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. This month, Maureen is back with Darwin Moore, who spent decades working for the Butte Falls Ranger District in what was then the Rogue River National Forest. He planted a lot of trees over those decades. But welcome to you, Maureen Flanagan Battistella.
Good morning, Jeff.
And Darwin Moore, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming to the studio.
Good morning.
I understand you have left the big city. Butte Falls was getting too big for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had to get farther back out in the woods where they had to pipe sunlight in.
Pipe sunlight in?
It's 5 minutes away by phone or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're, a 1950 graduate of Butte Falls High School?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How busy a place was Butte Falls when you were a teenager?
About the same. It was about 400 people right in town.
Mm-hmm. And how big, I mean, there was a lot of industry up there, a lot of people in the wood products business at that time, weren't there?
Yes, the Forest Service, loggers, Medford Corporation, and several Gippo loggers.
Mm-hmm. So lots of people doing lots of work up there. Did you always figure you'd work in the woods when you got out of school?
To tell you the truth, I never thought about it. I started logging, and I quit when I almost got killed twice, and I joined the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm. But you joined the military right out of high school, too, didn't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which service and where'd you go?
I was in the Air Force, and they never sent me out of the state. Mm-hmm. I volunteered once. That was enough.
Mm-hmm. That made you decide to come back to Butte Falls?
Darwin, you said you got almost killed twice. What happened?
Well, they had a gin pole out there, and one of the cables broke and come around. Looked like a weed eater when it come around. I dove behind a log.
Except it was big as your arm, I'll bet.
No, it's only about an inch through.
But it's still whipping through there.
Yeah, could really... And it was solid steel.
Mm, that caused you some damage. So and there was another time that you almost got killed?
Yeah, I was hooking, and one of them slabbed out, and I was in mud up to my knees, and I couldn't get out of the mud. It fell about a foot in front of me, a log about 15 inches.
Uh-huh. It just went plop
diameter.
In front of you. Yeah, so yeah, another foot or two, and that would have been the end of Darwin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, did you consider another line of work at some point, or that was it?
That was it.
Yeah, okay, so you got out of the logging business at that point.
I joined the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm. And what was the work then, when you first hired on at the Butte Falls Ranger District? What were you doing?
Oh, I was on a 10-man crew that went around and fought fires and planted trees and piled brush and you name it.
So all year long you guys were working?
Yeah, and finally I got into reforestation after that.
So was that something you had to train for, or something you had to apply to be part of?
They had on the job training mainly.
Mm-hmm.
You said you worked your way up.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you started at the bottom and you worked your way up.
Yes.
Doing what? I mean, what kind of scut work at the bottom of that ladder?
Well, a lot of tree planting. Mm-hmm. I planted enough trees to cover everybody in the state of Oregon.
One way or another.
And so talk about the work. I mean, what's it like out there? I mean, you're all kinds of weather, it sounds like, all parts of the year.
Well, when the tree planting time is wet and cold. And then when you get into brush piling and stuff, it starts to get hot. And you start getting on fires. Fact is, I was on this 1959 fire here.
The one in Ashland? The one that almost burned over the hill into town?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, wow, that was a pretty scary moment from what I understand. They kept the play going at the Shakespeare Festival to keep people from panicking.
Yeah. Yeah, the fire come all the way down to Ashland Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing, all right.
You said the fire camp was in Lithia Park.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, we drove around there last time and looked around to see where that fire camp was.
Mm-hmm. Was that up around where the old motor camp is?
It was in the bottom someplace. It's all changed there now. It was more wide open, you know, and it was flat area.
You said it was 45 years since last you'd been in Ashland.
Yeah, something like that. I'd never come back, hardly.
Uh-huh.
The people in here was real good people at that time. I mean, they opened all three swimming pools to us, and we enjoyed it here. I mean, it's when we was off duty. So they treated us good.
Is that like a trip to the big city to go to come from Butte Falls to Ashland back then?
Oh yes, this was a pretty good city here then, and I went to Sauk here for 1 year.
Which is now Southern Oregon University, where you're yes. sitting right here on the same campus.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you training for at Sauk?
I was going to be a teacher, a coach, and so on like that. I played 1 year of basketball, JV ball, and then I went in the service from there.
Mm-hmm. See, you thought about a few different careers not involving the woods, but the woods always called you back from the sounds of it.
Yeah, when I come back, well, I was working.
Did you have a family then? When did you get married?
I was 40 years old before I got married.
Oh, wow.
Wow, so about 1970 or so?
71 or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I married a girl from this area. And her brother was a cop here in Ashland for years.
Yeah. So you really got Southern Oregon through and through the blood, don't you?
Yeah.
All through your family. Darwin Moore is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is this month's Stories of Southern Oregon guest with Maureen Flanagan Battistella, who curates the whole series, Stories of Southern Oregon. If you have some questions for Darwin or some observations to share with him, maybe you worked with him in the years back. He's almost 87 years old. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So tell us about the Cat Hill Burn. This apparently was a major project in the Butte Falls Ranger District for generations of people from the sounds of it.
Yes, we started working on that about 1959 and ended it up about 1968 or 9. And we cleared the brush with a cat and put windrows in there, and then we planted in between the windrows. And you would never know by looking at it now that it was that way. The trees are about 70 feet high. Mm. And they had a log and show in part of it, log and thin and show, and they separated it out and made it look pretty good.
But the original Cat Hill Burn was like 1910 or so, is that right?
Right. It partially burned in 1890 sometime, and then big burn was in 1910. Then it burned again in 1925.
Mm. All right, so a place that had seen lots of fire, and it had not grown back as forest, it sounds like.
No, it's brush.
Yeah. What did it look like when you first saw it?
I seen it from my house in Butte Falls. It looked like a big lawn up there. When I got up there, I fell through it one time. It took me about 100 feet out, and took me about 3 hours to get out.
What do you mean?
It was so brushy down under there, and you couldn't move hardly.
Oh, you couldn't whack your way out of there.
Mm-hmm. Just fell into the brush and
right.
like a cave or something?
Yeah, you just boom down to the bottom, and then you try to find your way out.
Wow.
It was about twice as tall as a D8 cat, if you know how tall they are.
So that's about, I don't know, 24 feet or so, maybe.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So when you talk about, what was the reason they were having so much trouble getting, they first had to clear the brush to be able to get trees to grow? I mean, had they gone through a couple of rounds of replanting up there?
They tried to when it first burned in 1910, but they had a lot of trouble getting the trees up there because they would die before they got there. Some of them did survive. And then finally the Three C's planted some. And then when we come along, well, we planted 4,000 acres of them. Mm-hmm. And there was about 4,000 acres that was naturally restocked, and about 4,000 acres that was it was a solid rock pile, so we couldn't do nothing with it.
When you say the Three C's, that's the Civilian Conservation Corps?
Yes.
Yeah, so during the Depression, the young men out there planting trees. So a lot of failures of reforestation. You mentioned planting windrows to get the project successful. What does that mean?
Well, a windrow is where the cats on each side pushed them up into a windrow all the way down the mountain. And in between the windrows was where they pushed the brush off. And that's where we planted the trees. And later we burned the windrows and planted them.
All right, so really it was just a barrier to keep the wind from knocking out the seedlings? Mm-hmm. So when you're watching, and of course this is a, you mentioned almost 10 years that you spent planting, replanting Cat Hill. I mean, did you remember the day or the week when you felt like, hey, this is finally working? It's finally going to take?
Oh, boy. I don't think I ever thought about that. It was a pretty good job. And
endless.
Yeah.
Endless.
We had several other brush fields going too, mm-hmm. but Cat Hill was one of the bigger ones.
So was it called Cat Hill because of the tractor, or was it just Cat for Cat?
I don't know why it was called Cat Hill. I never figured that one out.
Okay. And I understand that there are always some issues when you do some reforestation. You're worried about the deer getting to them, but you had some other issues with other critters out there too.
Oh yeah. Porcupines is one of the big ones that come along. big jackrabbits too. Jackrabbits come along if you left a little bit of brush in there and it snipped the trees off. And the porcupines would strip them and eat them. And then the gophers would eat the roots off of some of the trees.
Oh,
so
no
you end help. Up you end up fighting it quite a while.
You had a lot of enemies against the reforestation effort out there.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the trees are 70 feet tall there now.
Oh yeah.
And they've been in there and done some, it was a demonstration logging you were talking about?
They just had a timber sale in there a few years ago, and that's after I got out.
Mm-hmm.
And they spread it out, the trees out to about 25 feet apart. Now they're doing pretty good.
So they selectively logged in order
yes.
to keep the forest going. Yeah, nice.
So over the time, I mean, you started in the Forest Service in the mid-50s, and when did you retire?
January 3rd, 1986.
Okay, so about 30 years plus with the Forest Service. That's a good long run. And over the course of the time that you were in there, how much did the practices, how much did the tools change?
We started out with the Michigan bar, which was a straight bar with a straight deal on it, and you couldn't plant very many trees with them. And then
this is an automatic planter kind of thing.
No,
oh, no.
He was the automatic.
Automatic.
Oh, all right.
Man.
You were the muscle power. Okay.
And then they come in with a hodag, what mm-hmm. we call a hodag, and it looks like a hoe except it's got about a 15-inch blade on it.
All right, so it's got the axe face on the other side of the hoe.
Yeah, and you just swing it and put the trees in that way.
Mm-hmm. So how big did your upper body get over the course of the 30 years in the Forest Service?
I got pretty good size, especially with pruning along with it.
So there was always something to do up there. So there
oh,
was,
yeah.
Did you ever have any real slack moments? Were there times when there was just nothing to do because you were between projects or something?
When the weather got real bad, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what would you do on super snowy days and things like that?
Go home.
What sort of workforce is up there now?
Just a fire crew.
Okay. So no forest management staff?
Not much, no. Uh-huh.
So that's a big change.
Is the Ranger District office still open?
It's open, but we haven't got an officer. I mean, we just got an officer now, but the ranger is a prospect.
All right, that's the High Cascades Ranger District?
Yeah.
I forget. They've renamed the districts a couple times on what was the Rogue River National Forest. It's now the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest.
Yeah.
So it's still recognizable in some form.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So when you guys were out on reforestation crews in particular, how big a crew was there? And it sounds like a lot of handwork, but how many people?
The first we started out with about that 10.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that it got over, well, I must have had 40 people out
mm-hmm.
there
mm-hmm.
planting at times. Not all the time, but in there.
So how much leeway did you have as a crew boss to figure out how things were going to be done? I mean, did you have a chance to look at the landscape and say, well, why don't we try this over here and try that over there? Or was it just
we had to go through and with the brush fields and plan them out to take the brush off of them first. And then we ordered the trees 2 years in advance, 2-0 stock, unless they were container trees, which you can grow them in about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And those we used in rock piles, those container trees, and bare roots what we used out in the good ground. And for a logging area, well, you knew about when it was going to end. So we had ordered the trees ahead of time. And we had seed zones where to where to get the cones from to draw, to grow the trees.
So seed zones, so you were growing trees that were naturally part of that ecology.
Yeah, the seed zone, of course, is just a area that's marked off kind of like it was in the 502 seed zone, uh-huh. Prospect's in the 503, and uh-huh. I think Applegate was in the 511 or something like that, and we collected seeds from those areas for the same areas.
Oh, right, to make sure that the same kinds of trees, species right. got back there. Yeah,
right, and we did it by elevation, too.
When you talked about ordering the trees, was this had the Forest Service nursery opened yet?
Not in the beginning, and they opened a little later, and we used to get trees out of there then the last few years.
Mm-hmm. The old J. Herbert Stone Forest Nursery,
West of Central Point. Operation.
Darwin Moore is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange here with Maureen Flanagan Battistella for Stories of Southern Oregon for this month. And you can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions to ask or stories to share at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I wanted to ask about some of the stuff you worked with. We talked about the tools changing over time, but I understand that there were some fairly toxic chemicals that you worked with in the early days, too.
Yes, we did. And they cut us out of those after a while, but we had stuff like 1080, which was very deadly. Mm-hmm. And we had strychnine we worked with, and those are the two main ones.
As herbicides to keep the brush down?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We had dendrin-treated seeds where we spot seed areas.
Mm-hmm. You had 2,4-D out there too, is that right?
We had 2,4-5-T also to begin with till they outlawed it.
And that's like Agent Orange, isn't it?
That's
in
it.
Vietnam, really? Okay.
Were you trained in how to use these substances safely? What were the safety changes that occurred over time?
With that kind of stuff?
Or any of it. I know like cheese chucks.
Like 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D, they cut 2,4-5-T out and they kept 2,4-D. And we had to wear some masks and certain things like that. And then on the strychnine blocks, we put them up in trees or we had regular little compartments we put them in, and they knocked those out, of course. Mm-hmm. We didn't do those. What else did I say was bad?
Was there stuff you left out to try to get the critters away, to keep the rabbits and the porcupines and the deer from munching on the little trees?
Oh, yeah. That was what I was talking about, that strychnine.
Well, that's what for them. Okay. Yeah. Not for pesticides. Not for, all right.
And we had to control it and try to keep it from getting to the wrong animals.
Okay. So it's like a rat poison kind of
because,
thing.
Because one of those small animals that clip off the tree roots, they'd make it about 6 feet before they dropped over dead.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we had fences built around certain things so that the deer couldn't get in there.
Uh-huh. All right. Bit of a chemical warfare thing in there for a while, sounds like.
Yeah, we had some of that. So 1968 was the last time we got to do any of that aerial spray.
Oh, so it says you dropped that off. Oh, the last time you worked that area, you mean?
The last time we got to drop
any of the
aerial spray.
Okay, aerial spray stopped then, okay. Tell us about the Sugar Pine Company Cafe.
Oh, what's her name? Wait till she hears that one. Anyways.
Corey,
she's had that for about 10, 12, 15 years maybe. And one thing, she's been pretty good host there. And
it's a real part of the community, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And there's a bunch of us always go in there in the morning. And
even though you live in Trail?
Yeah, I still go in there.
Yeah, every morning?
Mm-hmm. And
you have the same thing for breakfast every morning?
No.
Did you have time to stop there this morning?
Nope.
All right. Came right down the hill to Ashland. Well, I hope they're treating you well in Ashland.
There's some special stuff going on at the Sugar Pine right now, right? Mm-hmm. What's going on there now?
Oh, we have a young fellow up there that was born he's born bad. I mean, he's
Got some challenges.
Yes, got some real challenges.
And, his name is Carter, right?
And Carter is his name. And they got some T-shirts out and some cups to sell and, I don't know, several things.
Christmas trees.
And yeah, Christmas trees.
Yeah, the whole community's bringing in Christmas trees to support Carter.
And they're always doing something to help Blair Anderson out with Carter.
Yeah.
All right, sounds like a community coming together. But, I mean, all that time in Butte Falls, though, with not much time away in the military, I mean, does it feel weird to live farther away from town now that you've moved off the trail?
No, I'm not that far. I'm only 16 miles away.
Distance doesn't matter much to a guy who's lived in the woods most of his life, does
it? No. No, it's amazing.
So we only have a couple of seconds left here, but you have these books here that obviously, since we're on radio, we can't show people. But what's in all these? You have clippings from all your years of work?
Yes. One of them is,
It's a short picture history of reforestation on the Butte Falls Ranger District by Darwin Moore.
Yes.
All right.
And this one had all the maps and stuff that they had in it.
All right. So you've kept good records of your years up there. You must look back with pride at your time in the Forest Service then.
Oh, yeah. We had pretty good success. We got most of our plantations and so on survived. So. Mm-hmm. We got them to grow. So
that third album there is Family Pictures and Butte Falls Local Pictures.
All right. Yeah.
We're going to put them in the archives today.
Excellent. Going to the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, which is where the stories of Southern Oregon reside. Maureen Flanagan Battistella is the curator and my co-host for this segment. Darwin Moore, who worked for all those many years at the Butte Falls Ranger District, planting trees and getting forests to grow back. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, you bet.